This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Matt Wells. In this week's programme, a high-level panel convenes to try and stop the exodus of young African migrants. And following the UN Ocean Conference, Kenya goes in search of new ways to tap into the blue economy. But first, the endorsement of an action plan on albinism in sub-Saharan Africa has given renewed hope to people born with the condition, a UN human rights expert said. Ikponwosa Iro was speaking just ahead of International Albino Awareness Day, observed on the 13th of March. Albinism results from a lack of melanin, producing lighter than normal skin and hair. People with the condition have suffered discrimination and exclusion, and some have even been killed for their body parts due to superstitious beliefs. Flora Nducha spoke to Ms. Iro, who's the UN independent expert on human rights of persons with albinism.
We have some reason to have hope. There is a political will to take action against the attacks that people with albinism are facing. And that hope is found in this regional action plan, which I developed with multiple stakeholders across the continent. So we are very happy and proud that this is Africa's solution for what looks like an African problem.
What does this plan entail?
The regional action plan is 15 concrete measures that are very practical, and we got them from the recommendations that have been made from various UN and AU bodies and other international bodies, and we condensed those rather lofty recommendations in most cases into concrete practical things, such as provide iron bars and on the windows and doors of people with albinism in the rural areas where these attacks tend to happen. We also recommended providing some support to mothers of children with albinism as soon as they have babies. So training of midwives, including the local midwives, to give support to mothers so that they are not pressured into infanticide or pressured into not being able to advocate for themselves for what they need. So we also made recommendations such as providing cement to people who have lost their loved ones who have albinism so that their graves are not robbed, because there's a lot of cases of grave robbery, people trying to sell the bones of people with albinism for money. And one I should also add is legal reform, particularly in the area of trafficking in body parts. Right now, trafficking laws protect against trafficking in persons, but body parts are not covered in a sense. So also witchcraft laws need to be reformed as well to protect people from this harmful practice that comes from witchcraft.
And lastly, what's your message for the day?
Well, the theme for this year's Albinism Day is advancing with renewed hope. That's coming from a place of true regard for what we have achieved. Even though we have subsisting challenges like the attacks continue, the truth is the aggregate number seems to decrease in some countries. So there's reason for hope, even though there are still challenges. We have also come a long way in terms of awareness. It's growing, even though there's still more work to do. So where from the vantage point we're standing right now, things look more optimistic than before, even though we know that there's still a lot of work to do. We just have to take a moment to pause and realize that there is hope.
A high-level panel on migration in Africa has been established, hoping to stem the tide of young people forced to flee their homelands in search of work. Thokozile Ruzvidzo heads the Social Development Policy Division at the UN Economic Commission for Africa, UNECA, which established the body together with the African Union. The panel was launched earlier this month in Liberia and is chaired by the country's president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Ernest Chico spoke to Ms. Ruzvidzo and asked her what the panel hoped to achieve.
I'm sure, as you know, migration is a critical issue, not just on the continent, but globally. The high-level panel on migration is critical, first to get the heads of states, the political leadership, the technical leadership on the continent to engage much more on the issues of migration, so that there are policies, so that there are actions, so that we respond as a continent to migration, and specifically to look at the drivers of migration, look at employment, with a youth bulge that we have on the continent, which is leading to the high levels of young people migrating. The panel will be able to bring to the attention of the heads of states cutting-edge policies and recommendations on how they can start addressing the issues of migration.
Now, when I look at the panelists during the launch, I was just wondering, what was the criteria for selecting those who serve as members?
The high-level panel on migration is made up of a diversified group of people. It includes representatives from the private sector. It includes high-level representatives from governments, civil society organizations, from the academia, the youth. So we are looking at concept notes, we are looking at issues papers, we are looking at case studies that we look at examples of what is happening in receiving countries, in transit countries, in countries that actually see migrants leaving from. So all this will be contained in a report with critical recommendations that will be presented to the summit in June 2018.
I know gender is something you're quite passionate about. Is there a gender component to migration that you think this panel would incorporate, or you would like to see their work be part of?
In the presentations, when the high-level panel was being launched, one of the figures that came out, and I remember the president being taken aback that 49.5% of the migrants are women. She didn't realize that there is such a large number of women that is migrating. They are migrating as domestic workers. They are being displaced in countries of conflict. They are in the teaching field. They are in the nursing field. So there is a high level of migration amongst women, which unfortunately is often not recognized. So the high-level panel on migration will be looking at all these issues and how to help them.
Kenya has neglected the blue economy opportunities the ocean represents in the past and must do a better job in the future. That's according to Kenyan Environment, Water and Natural Resources Minister Judy Wakungu, who led the country's delegation to the historic UN Ocean Conference this month. She said Kenya had to increase the amount of coastline that was under protection and help preserve livelihoods. Ms. Wakungu spoke to Grace Kenaya.
We all need to pull together to work together to save our oceans. It is our oceans that actually unite us as a world. If there's detriment to the ocean in one part of the world, it eventually affects all other parts of the world. Countries like Kenya, for example, have focused more on agriculture, but we have neglected in the past our blue economy opportunities. We have large coastlines, for example. Our resources, when it comes to marine life, is also quite vast. Kenya now has about 6% of the coastline as protected areas. We want to increase this to about 10% so that we not only protect and conserve our oceans, but we also ensure that our people can gain their livelihood from the oceans.
What are the steps that Kenya as a country has taken to ensure that it protects its waters, its oceans, and also that the communities living around the areas surrounding oceans also probably gain from the oceans being there?
Kenya has put many laws and policies in place to ensure that we safeguard our marine resources. When I mentioned the issue of protected areas, we have about 6 reserves dedicated for the benefit of communities, and we want to increase this. Our communities are always our frontline protection when it comes to protecting our natural resources. We've done that quite well when you look at our land resources, but we want to extend this to the marine resources as well.
There's been an issue that has been raised even in this meeting, in the Oceans Conference, about the pollution, the waste toxic materials being dumped in the oceans, which affects the fish and the resources, water resources. As a country, are there any steps you've taken to safeguard against this?
As a country, we've done several things. First of all, we're raising awareness in all institutions. Our new constitution has made certain services devolved, and one of those services is solid waste management, which means that now each county is responsible for the solid waste. We've not had tremendous success at the moment. It's still early, but we're building capacity so that each county is now more responsible than they have been in the past.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN and Africa. You can follow more of our programmes at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Matt Wells.